podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the podcast that helps you dig deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver today to talk about churchgoers' views on church invitations. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be back.
I'm going to bring back an old favorite before we jump in is the kind of fun question, you know, where we have a little get to know each other chit chat, but it ties in. What is something you've invited people to recently? What's where you've had to make the choice or you've made the choice to invite someone, you know, doesn't have to be church related, but.
Can I defer it to my daughter? Because she's inviting everybody to her graduation party. So literally she was ordering more invitations last night because she ran out, even though we ordered, I think, 100 or something.
Oh, wow.
So yes, inviting is coming very easily to her right now as her graduation's coming up, and she's inviting everybody.
That's exciting. Is it exciting for you?
Absolutely. There'll be good food. There'll be a lot of fun and a lot to celebrate.
Excellent. How about you, Casey?
I was trying to get a guy on our church softball team, but he had some schedule conflicts, so he wasn't able to. But that was something I gave him a pitch as to why that was a good thing.
No pun intended.
There we go. Good job, Casey.
Waka waka.
So I've had the fascinating and exhilarating. Casey wanted me to make sure I brought up the fact that I'm engaged. Woohoo!
Yay.
And only 13 more sleeps until my wedding day. And so, but inviting people to engagement parties or to bridal showers. So I've had a couple of friends, actually been very fortunate friends who have kind of said, oh, you are doing this. And so it's a funny thing to invite someone to this situation where they could have the feeling of an implied gift is expected. And then also, as Casey put it, because when I brought my fiance into town, had different gatherings throughout the day. And Casey's point of clarification was, so I'm expected to be at 3 different events in one day that are designed to celebrate you, Lizette. And so there is a, the inviting has been something kind of top of mind also, but not to the wedding because nobody's invited except for my mom, you know, to that. So
even though I offered to, you know, go online, get some sort of certificate and officiate for you guys, but
the offers you've made to be a part of the ceremony have been all noted and declined.
Yep.
So, inviting, something we all do in lots of situations. And I hope your daughter experiences the same personal warmth and joy that I've experienced by the surprise benefit of gifts. And then, you know, because at first, I would say 2 months ago, I was like, oh my gosh, we're older. We don't need anything. And then as the gifts flow in, I'm like, wow, maybe if we put it off and had a few more showers.
It's amazing how registering for gifts changes that whole thing.
Oh.
It's like, well, I could use that.
And then suddenly
you have a whole plan.
And then now I'm like, oh, well, if I don't get it, now that I've chosen it and put it on the registry, I need it, you know. So, yeah.
That's what gift cards are for.
There we go. So, all right. Back to our research on churchgoers.
Oh, you mean inviting people to church?
Inviting people to church, right. The group we interviewed or surveyed, representative survey of 1,010 American churchgoers. So why is 1,010? I know that we've kind of discussed sample out of population. We've discussed that before. But how can we assure people that 1,010 churchgoers can really be helpful to them?
So in the process of answering that, I'm going to get a little pedantic. So sorry in advance. So that might not match your initial intuition that, oh, you know, there are millions of American churchgoers. We only asked 1,000. That's such a small amount of them. But I think we do have some intuition that this is the way that sampling works. So this is, again, this is a little bit of an artificial example, but this is the best to come up with. So if I have a bag of 1 billion M&Ms, and Lizette, what's your favorite color of M&M?
The brown M&M because it makes the most sense logically.
Okay.
It's chocolate.
Yep. So if half of them, if I tell you half of them are brown, right, and I've got 1 billion and I mix them all up and I pull out the first M&M and it's not brown, you'd say, okay, well, there was a 50% chance that happened. I'd pull out two of them, neither are around 25%. I pull out three, there's a 12.5% chance that would happen. 4, 6.25, 5, 3.1.
Man, you weren't kidding, were you? You did get pedantic.
So then you by the time I've pulled out six of them, you're saying like there's about a 1.5% chance that if you were telling the truth about that, those M&Ms, you know, being half of them being brown, that would have happened. So you're starting to say like, well, this is really implausible, right? But what we saw out of these six M&Ms, now you're starting to doubt what I said about a billion M&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I mean, that's pretty incredible that now you're making inferences about a bag of a billion M&Ms based on pulling six of them out, right? But
you may be overestimating my my statistics ability on the fly, but I'm rolling with you.
Yeah. So, but two quick caveats there. You know, at the end of this, we're not just trying for a lot of these to say, to rule out some numbers, right? But we're actually trying to narrow down to a pretty tight range of plausible numbers. You can't do that with pulling out six. You know, I'm saying 50% might not be one of the plausible numbers, but maybe 20% is, and maybe 0% is still. But, you know, we'd like want something tighter than that. But with a sample of 1,000, that gets us in the neighborhood of being 95% confident that of, you know, being within roughly 3% of the correct number in our estimate. So that's, you know, for that tightening, you can't do it in six, but in 1,000, you can get pretty close to, you know, having a good estimate there. And then the second thing is at the beginning of this artificially created example, I talked about, you know, mixing all the M&Ms up at the beginning. If I hadn't done that, you know, I could have just said, well, all the brown M&Ms are in the bottom of the bag, right? Like that's, and that might be true for all you know.
But, you know, if there are a billion M&Ms at my access, I'm not going to be really angry about the brown ones being at the bottom.
Uh-huh. So that idea of, okay, well, it's got to be mixed up first for this to be valuable. That's the idea of needing a representative sample as opposed to, you know, just if I ask my friends, no matter how many of my friends I ask, I'm not going to have a good view of American churchgoers. So again,
is that because your friends don't go to church?
It's because they're not necessarily representative of the population as a whole. So they share some commonalities that might make it a biased sample. So that representative part of it is an important key as well towards getting, you know, a good estimate that you have some level of confidence in.
Okay, so Scott, can you help me know if I've interpreted what he's said correctly? So going backwards, if I know that the brown ones are all on the bottom and I poke a hole in the whatever size container it is that can hold a billion M&Ms, but I poke a hole so I can access the brown ones, then that's similar to if Casey just asks his friends in a survey. You know, you're kind of going for the easiest access. These are the people I know. And that doesn't help you.
Well, I was talking about the top, actually.
Oh, the top.
Yeah.
I think the two of you have created the same problem,
right,
just on two different sides of the M&Ms. And that is, with our sampling, the assumption is that there's a random sample,
right,
that everybody's mixed up.
Right.
And so if all the brown M&Ms are on the bottom, as you've suggested, Lizette, or Casey's only sampling from the top, there could be a little bit of a problem there. But at the same time, over time, Casey will find out the truth as he digs further in. And if we actually have a random sample, we can get to a decent estimate with really just 30, 40 M&Ms. We'll actually have the start of an estimate.
You know, just as a note, in the future, if we ever use this, let's use Jelly Bellies and include like those really gross flavors, because then, you know, then there's just much more at stake.
Yeah, I agree.
Much more at stake in pulling one of the really gross flavored ones.
Uh-huh.
And so the other one being, you're saying if they are randomly mixed up and that billion is just, you know, shaken up beautifully, you're saying that if we pull 1,000 M&Ms from there, we should be able to see
within about 3%. We'd be 95% confident that, hey, I pulled out 40% of the ones I pulled out were brown. Well, you know, when we pulled out 1,000, well, then roughly between 37 and 43% of all the billion M&Ms in there are going to be brown.
Well,
and we save the trouble of not asking the other almost billion people.
Right.
Yeah, there we go.
So it's definitely a very powerful, I mean, sampling is as long as it's random sampling or you're getting a representative sample, it's a really powerful tool for being able to look at a small percentage of the overall and still be able to make powerful inferences about.
So we're asking our listeners to imagine that in the big bag of churchgoers in America, we've pulled 1,010 of them out, and we asked them, how often have they invited someone in the past 6 months how often they invited someone to church. 29% say I did not extend any invitations. I say balderdash, and I would guess that maybe that could be. Well, add the 9% who say I do not know how many.
Just about all of that.
They lost count.
They totally lost count. You know, they lost count, but yet did not feel confident to say three or more, mm-hmm. which was 25%. So that's, 25% say they've issued three or more invitations to church. So I feel like they can kind of carry the weight for everybody else and they let the rest of us off the hook.
There can be that danger. And there also can be a little bit of a halo effect on a question where everybody knows what the right answer is mm-hmm. to be inviting more people. And, you know, in a given time frame, you know, that may or may not be appropriate. If you're investing in some relationships that you need to invest a little more before you ask that particular question, you may have invited them to other things other than church or to have some gospel conversations, but it hasn't included a church conversation. So there definitely could be some of these churchgoers that are indicating they have, or maybe they're stretching the time frame a little bit in their mind, that it might have been a little more than 6 months, but let me go ahead and squeeze it in since I actually did ask somebody
right.
this year.
Right. And let me rephrase the actual question. Or let me ask it accurately. During the past 6 months, how many times did you invite an individual or a family to attend a worship service with you at your church? And then the explanation include repeated invitations to the same person or family and include invitations even if they did not attend. Mm-hmm. Is every 6 months, 17% said they did at least one. 21% said two invitations. 25% said three or more invitations. My question is every 6 months enough or even once a year if someone is investing? Because I do like our clarification. You know, they're investing. Say it is that they can count it if they're asking the same family or that same individual that they're investing in.
I don't think there's a magic cutoff point of, hey, 6 months is the right frame that you should have at least one invitation or 1 year or 2 months. I think we could debate that honestly all day. Some of probably our motivation for picking 6 months rather than a longer term would be trying to just keep it within the realm of something they could remember, something mm-hmm. specific, so they could be a little more specific with their number.
One of the things that I think stands out to me as far as being realistic, or the expectation is when we did our church planter research, some of our original research that we did on church planter assessment, and I did the interviews with church planting experts around the country, their criteria for, you know, who they wanted to see as a church planter, you know, someone starting a church, someone expected to, you know, not only invite people to church, you know, share the gospel, all of that. I was amazed at how their expectation for church planters was the habit or the lifestyle of, you know, one or two people a year, you know, that they're regularly investing in, you know, seeing come to know Christ, inviting them to church, and, you know, and that could be sharing with more people, but then, you know, the fruit of that one to two a year. And that's for a church planter. And so what always stood out to me from that project is that one or two a year is an indication of, well, one, that they don't want church planters who aren't doing that, but is it realistic to put on an entire congregation, you know, more than that, you know?
And I think, you know, again, it's we're asking questions that where context matters a lot. You know, if you're, and you know, the way you're thinking about invitations probably as well, you know, that, okay, you know, there's a family that's new to the neighborhood, and at some point in our conversation it comes up that, you know, well, we're going to church this Sunday, you know, if you guys are still looking for somewhere to go, or, you know, like that sort of conversation feels like that could happen pretty often, you know, that, okay, you know, if you're connecting with new people a lot, as opposed to, you know, especially where you were talking about with, you know, sharing the gospel and really, you know, having like a very deep personal investment in somebody. Like, you're not going to have a new one of those every week. That's, you know, somebody that is really valuing that, what your perspective on that sort of thing. So, I don't know.
Going back to our transformational church research, I saw that in transformational churches, 53% said that there was a culture of inviting at their church, where people are constantly invited by others to get connected on a deeper level. So it's not the exact same question, but that it is it's the culture of inviting. There's obviously some kind of excitement there, some kind of enthusiasm to share what's going on, you know, what God is doing there.
So, and that's not a huge percentage. That's right. Just saying that a majority of people in a congregation that we're labeling transformational, they're in the top 10%. Just a majority, just barely a majority, are saying we've got a culture where we invite a lot, and so it doesn't take every person in the church to actually make a big impact.
Mm-hmm. And not to be plugging our book Transformational Church, but I do think that's one of the more encouraging things in the research. What you pointed out is that transformational churches, on all the areas, all the domains, you see that it's not 100%. These are not 90% on everything kind of churches are 100%. But it's significantly larger than those who weren't considered transformational. So people have a lot of reasons for not bringing guests to worship service. My favorite is I'm too busy serving at church on Sunday morning, which is a reality for some of the most engaged people in church.
Yeah, when you're preparing a Sunday school lesson, or you're busy with other childcare or something else at the church, if you had a guest, how would you even welcome them and have them sit next to you when you're off busy in another part of the building?
I think for me, the fact that, because so the first few on here were the highest percentages were I do not know 31%, they refuse my invitations 20%. And I do not know anyone to invite 17%. So just that I do not know in particular that, like, this isn't even really on my radar as, you know, I hadn't really given this thought, like, why am I not, you know, they didn't necessarily feel like they had an excuse. It just wasn't even something that they had been making excuses. It was just, I don't know. I hadn't, you know, I guess that just was interesting to me that almost a third of churchgoers haven't really thought a lot potentially about inviting guests to the point you have a reason why you are or aren't.
Which makes me wonder, would even posing the question or, you know, giving the challenge just raise that awareness and increase the likelihood that a few of those would be, you know, thinking about who they could invite?
Well, and like you said about kind of having a culture of inviting as well, that's, you know, I feel like the more you have that, the less that top one flits, you know, that I do not know. You know, if you're talking about inviting people to church regularly, I think you'd at least know why you're not doing it if you're not doing it and you're a church that's talking about it a lot.
What are some things, if someone invites you to something, you know, that's putting ourselves on the other side, someone invites you to a gathering of people that you're only going to know the person that's inviting you, what do you hope that they have in mind, or what are your expectations?
You're sure hoping that they've invited you to a worthwhile event, you know, because, you know, there's going to be some awkwardness in some moments. You're not going to sure what's happening. And so sometimes I think some of the inviters are trying to think that through. Is this the ideal week for me to invite them? Because I want them to have a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on that end of, like, you know, again, like that awkwardness is like, well, how much awkwardness, you know, are there going to be people who, you know, am I going to feel welcomed? Am I going to feel out of place? You know, that sort of question, I think, is going to weigh heavily on, you know, is it going to be really uncomfortable to go to whatever thing I'm being invited to?
You know, invitations, you know, kind of point to what church is about and really what any ministry is about, and that's building relationships. And really ministry leaders have to be thinking about intentionally about those paths toward relationship. and where are the on ramps and even where are the off ramps and what are they reinforcing and how are they reinforcing those things? And so if they want people to be inviting within a church, then that's something church leaders have to be bringing up.
All right. Anything else, guys, before we wrap on up? Terrific. We want to say thanks to everyone for listening. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at SMCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beard, or at Lifeway Research. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.